here.
This call is being recorded.
There's background noise. Just make sure to mute yourself. And also, we're recording this call just so if anybody wants to join the call, we can share that
webinar.
With you.
Yep.
Again, you're off mute, so make sure to mute yourself. There's background noise. So we've been doing, there's a lot of changes going on right now in the world of chemical safety, and so we thought it was really important to have our working group call. We do these from time to time, and we're going to do another one right after Labor Day. But we wanted to talk today about Prop 65. We've got their changes that are going into effect on the warning label safe harbor language, which will start in on August 30th, 2018 is when those changes go into effect. And so we want to talk about that. Josue with BBC International is on the line, and so we want to turn it over to him in a second to kind of talk about our industry response on that. We've also done a webinar just a couple of weeks ago on Prop 65, and if you are going to use the safe harbor language, what you need to do. We did that with Melissa Jones of Stoll Reeves. We're going to send that out to everybody on the call to make sure you've had a chance to listen to that. And we've also posted on our website a good document from Stoll Reeves outlining exactly what you need to do if you do decide to use the safe harbor language. So we wanted to make sure everybody was aware of that. So we're going to start with Prop 65, and then I'm going to cover a couple of updates on the state law, chemical safety law front, and then we want to talk about our chemical fail report and our RSL. So that's the roadmap of what we're going to be covering on the call today. And if you have any comments, we want to have a lot of discussion today, especially about Prop 65. So just speak up if you want to discuss anything. And so with that, I want to turn it
we're
over
on.
To Josue to kind of talk about some of the recent conversations and thoughts we've been having on Prop 65.
Thank you, Thomas. Good afternoon, everybody. What I'd like to do is just kind of go through kind of at a broad stroke for those of you who may not be familiar with the topic, what's happening. But effective August 30th, 2018, in just a little bit over a month, there's going to be a change to the law as it relates to Proposition 65. Any consumer products manufactured before August 30th, 2018 can still follow the old guidelines. So the products that we have on our shelves are still okay in terms of following the old guidelines, but anything manufactured post August 30th has to follow kind of the new laws. And basically, what's happening is this is an issue of safe harbor. I think if we rewind the clock to several years ago, Prop 65 has been around for a long time, but several years ago, the footwear industry underwent some litigation and some attacks from people out there who wanted to get some money, basically. And they started testing our products and saying that we're not compliant with Prop 65, therefore we needed to pay. And so there were some class action lawsuits that were filed. Many companies participated in those and jumped in for protection purposes. But for the most part, we learned at that time years ago that full compliance with the Prop 65 law, the way it's written, is nearly impossible for us as an industry because there's over 800 chemicals on that list, and it's impossible for us without testing all 800 chemicals to say without a doubt that our products are free of all of those chemicals being present. The good thing about the old law is that we had safe harbor in that if we put a warning label on our products, we wouldn't be open to litigation in the state of California. And the language that provided a safe harbor, although it was aggressive, it was still a little soft. In other words, it said this product may contain chemicals known to the state of California to cause reproductive harm or birth defects. The language now with the new change is a lot more aggressive, and that's really why we're having this dialogue. There's new requirements that they're asking us to follow where we specify and actually list the name of the chemical, one or two chemicals. One chemical has to be listed minimally. And the language in itself, it took the word may out. It says, for example, the product contains chemicals known to the state of California to cause cancer, birth, and reproductive harm. And it asks you to put in an actual chemical or two, and you have to list the long form. So that safe harbor language has become more aggressive. And what I personally don't like about it is that it's also become more specific. So what I mean by that is, if they're asking you to list at least one chemical or more, and you do list one or two chemicals, what happens if those people who are suing us come after us for a chemical you did not list in the label? So my question to Melissa Stoll Reeves was, are we safe if we list one or two chemicals and we don't list the rest? And her answer was no. If you list lead and phthalates, for example, but they come after you for a chemical that's not on the warning label, we still have no safe harbor. So now we're putting a scary label on a product and we're still not really protected. So that really is the dilemma that's been the source of a lot of the dialogue that's been going on. Part of the dialogue has been understanding the new law change. And like Thomas said, the FDRA has been very active in that. And the second piece of the dialogue has been, what do we do about it? And how do we handle it as an industry? So Matt and Thomas asked me if I would be open to sharing on a private membership call kind of what BBC as a children's supplier is planning on doing to handle this situation. And so that's what I was going to do. And then I guess we'll open it up for questions on this. And just for the people on the call, I have collaborated with other companies on this, shared our point of view and our perspective. And without naming those companies, they've kind of agreed that this is probably the best approach. So basically, we've decided at BBC that we are not going to label products with this warning label. And the reason is a little bit of what I described. We feel that we don't want to mislead the consumer. We don't want to put down lead or phthalates or any other chemicals, one or two chemicals, knowing that we don't have any safe harbor anyway. So that's the first thing that we're going to do, is we are not going to label. The second thing we're going to do is there are guidelines for what you can do on an internet sale or an online sale. And what we've asked our programmers in IT to do is to go into our shopping carts, and if the consumer places an item for purchase and they put in a ship to address that's California based, if that zip code shows as a California based, then we are going to pop a label, a warning label up, and there's requirements on how to do that. You have to do it before the purchaser makes his purchasing decision in the shopping cart. So we have it timed perfectly. But we decided to do that only because if somebody's going to be buying out of California or shipping to California, we feel that the people in California are used to these labels. It's not actually on the physical product in our warehouse or at the store level. Once the inventory is out there, obviously it's a game changer. But on an online sale, we feel like putting a label on there, and we're going to use the short form, which covers everything, where you don't have to list individual chemicals. We feel like that's probably a prudent approach to do, and we're willing to take the sales risk on that. And then most importantly, we want to make sure we're doing the right thing with our products. So we're going to continue to test our shoes for chemicals that we feel are predominantly found in our products. We're going to make sure that we will continue to be very active and aggressive about reducing and eliminating those chemicals that we feel are prevalently found. And that's it. We're going to use the FDRA Tier 1, Tier 2, and Tier 3 product categories to test that, because that's really, as an industry, how we define which chemicals we need to be careful about in our product category. So just in an effort to make this a very quick and brief discussion, that's kind of what BBC is going to do. I think we can take on any questions now, Matt, if you agree, about requirements or any opinions that anybody might have. One of the things, the last thing that we're going to do is we've created an internal document on our point of view. And when our retailers reach out to us and they oftentimes look to protect themselves, since we're a vendor, and they say, hey, BBC, we need you to confirm 100% that you're complying with Prop 65 language. That's a very difficult question. We understand why they're doing it. They want to protect themselves and push it onto the vendor in terms of responsibility. You know, we're going to come out with, our response to that is going to be, this is our company policy. This is how we're addressing it. We're going to educate our retailers, and we're going to be consistent in how we do that. And that was a recommendation we got from one of our retail partners we thought was very, very intelligent, very wise to do that. So Matt, that's my piece. If you want to take over and open it up for questions and answers.
Yeah, so we're happy to, again, everybody's off mute. We're happy to take any feedback, comments. We recognize that the situation with companies, the companies are in different places, different positions on this, and you have to do your own internal assessment. One thing that we've really tried to do is increase knowledge of what's going on. I mean, with this going into effect next month. So we've provided a good document. If you do decide to use the safe harbor language, it really does highlight all of the technical things you need to know before you do that, or as you do that. And so I would encourage you to look at that. We'll actually send that out after the call, and also to listen to the webinar where Melissa walked through the latest on what exactly is needed with the language and answered some questions. And so we put that together on a knowledge perspective, but also risk assessment. We'll talk about this in further down, but the importance of our RSL and the importance of our chemical fail report, which we put out today, and we put that out every quarter. It's important as a company to assess risk and to realize this is to deciding if you're going to label, how you're going to label. It's all about risk. And so we want to try to help with increasing both of those areas, the risk assessment and the knowledge. And so we've been working to that with this product safety working group. So with that, I know there may be some comments and some questions. I think Matt has a question.
Just one more thing before we open it up is to Josue's point on internal documentation that outlines kind of the way in which policy you've adopted on this board in an attempt to educate your retail partners, et cetera. We can share with you kind of a template that you can use that one of our member companies supplied to us that we are scrubbing to make more generic, just to provide some guidance on things that you can do to communicate both to your internal stakeholders as well as your external customers. So if you have an interest in that, let us know. We'll be happy to share that with you so that you can more kind of standardize your approach to this, depending on how you want to approach it. But that's another tool that we have available to you. So with that, any questions or comments for Josue or for us that you'd like to interject, the floor is all yours.
Sometimes it's hard to issue questions in a group call on a subject matter that's so sensitive. I understand that. But I just wanted to open up, I'm available to talk to anybody privately, as is Matt and Thomas. As always, we'll hold it in confidentiality. But if you need some private advice if you have a point of view on how you want to go to market and you don't necessarily want to bring it up on a group call, please give us a call and we'll be happy to take that call.
Yeah, absolutely. Does anyone else have... before we kind of lower the curtain on this discussion, does anyone have a point of view on as to how you're approaching this and how you're managing it that you think would be helpful for the broader group?
Hey, Matt, Thomas, this is Eric. Not really on how we're managing it, but just wanted to bring up if it hadn't been discussed in previous calls that since we're talking Prop 65, that as of October 1st, DMF will be on that list. So that may or may not be of interest to different companies, but something to look at when you're looking at the new way of labeling as well.
Thanks, Eric. That's very helpful, and appreciate you raising that and those comments. Anybody else have any questions, concerns, thoughts on these changes to Prop 65, how you're responding? All right. So with that, again, you can check out the documents. If there's more questions that you want to give offline, feel free to email Josue or Matt or me to talk about it further offline. So we want to move on to kind of some things that are going on in the state level. And one thing we've done that we did for our Boston Compliance Summit this year is we took a deep dive into these state initiatives, the growing patchwork of state chemical safety laws. And we looked at how they were similar, how they're different, some changes that are happening. And so really the major, well, one thing I want to say is that document, we'll release the document again that we did for that summit. And we're looking at, in particular, Washington State, Vermont, and Oregon. All three of those have chemical safety laws that are similar. They deal with chemicals of high concern to children's products. They all define children as under 12. They all require reporting to the state. It's different than Prop 65, where with Prop 65, you are notifying consumers. Here, you are reporting to the states. And all three of these are different, though. They're different in how you report, when you report, fees you have to pay the state, and what you have to put into the report. And so we've got a list that compares those, and we'll send that out. One big difference between them is before 2017, they all had nearly the same 66 chemicals that they regulated. And so the list were, the requirements were different, but the chemicals were similar on the list. In 2017, Washington added 20 chemicals to their list, and they took off three. And so those three chemicals are still on Oregon and Vermont's lists. Now what we're seeing is Oregon in particular is making an effort to move closer to the chemical list of Washington. And so they are proposing to add five chemicals to the list, and they're proposing to take off those same three chemicals. Oregon can only add five chemicals each year. So again, whatever they do this year or next year, the lists are still going to be different. And we've also, that there is such a patchwork with the chemicals, on that same document, we list all of the chemicals. And we compare what chemicals are regulated in each state. So that's something that is a challenge in kind of addressing this growing patchwork of state chemical safety laws. And that's, again, the same goal we've had is increasing knowledge of that, increasing efforts to identify risk. And so we think, you know, providing that list of chemicals and the requirements in each can help you make a decision on how to comply with those state statutes. So are there any thoughts on that? Again, we'll send out that information after the call, explaining a little bit more on the differences and similarities between those three state laws. Okay. So the other issue that we wanted to talk about that we sent out today is our chemical risk report. And that's something we work with SGS and TÜV-SÜD on to identify chemicals that they test for in footwear and what are the fail rates for those. And so I hope everybody on the call has received that document. If you didn't, let us know and we'll make sure to get that to you. But we sent that out along with the call reminder today. And again, just to help kind of look and see what we're seeing when it comes to chemicals and fail rates. If you look at the list, one thing that TÜV-SÜD has highlighted is DMFA. The fail rate is extremely high, 40%. But you can see the top three chemicals that they've listed, DMFA, Chrome 6, and pH. And they do a good breakdown of this where both labs do, where they say, here's the item we tested for, this is the material that you will find it in, here's our test method, here are the requirements, the number of tests, and this is our fail rate. And so as we're thinking about our RSL and thinking about complying with the state laws and also Prop 65, we think this document is helpful. And so that's something we send out every quarter, and we're going to continue to do that. Again, that went out today, and so be sure to take a look at that. So are there any thoughts on the chemical report? And with that, we've also listed contacts for SGS and TÜV-SÜD who put together that report. so that if you have further questions on their analysis and testing, you can reach out to them directly. And then finally, we want to talk about our RSL. And we have been taking a look at that this summer and this year, especially after our compliance summit in Boston, where we really went through a lot of the things that are going on here in the U.S. and Europe with the state initiatives. And we just want to do a good review of that and make sure that the chemicals that we have listed and the information we have listed is the most up-to-date. And so what we're doing is that's something that you can find on our website. If you go to the product safety tab under key product safety documents, we have FDRA and TÜV-SÜD's Global Product Safety Guidebook. And it has the RSL, and it breaks things down into tiers. You have tier one, which are chemicals that are covered currently by state and federal laws within the U.S. and should be tested for as part of a reasonable testing program. Tier two is substances that are regulated outside of the U.S., including the EU, that may be present in some footwear. Some of these are covered by Prop 65, as probably all of these chemicals are covered by Prop 65 on the list, because there's more than 900 chemicals that are in Prop 65. But with tier two, we've noticed that these are chemicals that are not under much regulatory scrutiny. So this is a lower priority than tier one. And then tier three are substances that are regulated outside of the U.S., again, including within the EU, maybe present in some footwear, and they could be a focus in longer-term legislation or legislation in the longer term in the U.S. We've worked to form this years ago, and we prioritize chemicals. And with the working group, we really want to, again, make sure this is fully current and have discussions on the chemicals and whether there are items on the list in Tier 2 that should be elevated to Tier 1, to higher priority for testing, or there are some that should be elevated from Tier 3. And so we're going to send this list out, the updated list, after we've reviewed and updated it. We're going to send that out in August, and then we're going to have another discussion on our next product safety working group call after Labor Day, where we really take a look at the chemicals that are on the list and whether we need to make changes. And maybe we don't. There may be situations where we don't need to make any changes, but we at least wanted to do our due diligence and just conduct a review with all that's been happening in the state and the EU and Prop 65 and other product safety laws. We want to make sure that everything is fully current and fully up to date and the most useful information possible. So with that, are there any issues anybody else wants to discuss? Any comments, any questions on anything we've covered today? Matt, do you have anything you want to add on anything in the world of product safety or chemical safety?
Yeah, the only thing I would add is just because we're located here in D.C. and there's been kind of constant interest in federal responses to streamline the regulatory environment. You know, I think with the administration as it is now, those efforts, there's nothing new for us to report on TSCA or elsewhere on efforts to streamline this. And I think the patchwork is the appropriate analogy to how we'll continue to manage this from a state-by-state level. But I think Josue's remarks in particular, our goal has always been to be pragmatic. Not every brand and retailer is progressive as some on one end of the spectrum, and finding a pragmatic solution and being honest and upfront and having confidence. I think one of the things that we've learned through all this in the last decade since that first Prop 65 notice went out to a brown shoe company, pre-walk shoe that was sold at Walmart. Ever since those days, we've learned that documenting what you're doing, having internal policies that you adhere to, and having confidence in those policies is what's really important. I think gives a lot of people comfort rather than just kind of being reactionary, being proactive, but not necessarily trying to adhere to every single letter of each of these laws to a T, knowing that that it's impossible and it would drive us into bankruptcy. So with that, that's kind of my closing remarks, and welcome any kind of continued conversation or questions that folks have on this call. Anyone? Bueller. Hello.
We're here, Matt. We're here.
We know.
Starting to wonder.
Here, so.
It's funny, in the system we can see where everyone's located. Some of y'all look like you're at the beach, which I'm very jealous. But anyway, that's our plan. We wanted the call to be 30 minutes long, and I think we've met that goal. And that's where we are. So be on the lookout, I guess, for the updated RSL as we circulate that. I've already got a number of people emailing me for the example, the verbiage for the example on what your internal policy is relative to Prop 65 and labeling or not labeling. So we will scrub that and send that out. And then Thomas will circulate all the other stuff he's committed to circulating. So.
We've got a lot of material. So look at that this afternoon. We're going to send you another email with a bunch of documents in it. So thanks, everybody, for joining the call today. Again, if you have questions, feel free to email me at tcrockett@fdra.org. You can email Matt at mpriest@fdra.org. And thanks so much for taking the time today to join the call and to having this call again in September and staying in touch before then. So thanks, everyone.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.